You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to Horsemanship Radio. I'm Debbie Roberts-Laux from the Monty Roberts International Learning Center in Solvang, California, where for decades we've been exploring Monty's belief that horses and humans communicate best through patience, observation, and trust. Since 2013, this podcast is a place where we share those discoveries and conversations with horse experts and horse lovers who are all enjoying the journey to understand the horse a little bit better. Whether you're in the saddle every day or simply love learning about horses, we're glad you're here. Dr. Ben Sykes is both an advocate for the movement in horses and also a veterinarian who believes that eating is a behavior. Some of the things that we talked about are about walkout stalls and modern stable designs with increasing socialization for the horses. When it comes to equine health, few names resonate with as much authority and impact as Associate Professor Ben Sykes. A world-renowned expert in equine gastric ulcer syndrome and one of the most influential figures in veterinary internal medicine, Ben Sykes has carved a career that spans continents, disciplines, and decades, all in the pursuit of better understanding and preventing gastrointestinal disease in horses. He's a board certified with both the American and European colleges of veterinary internal medicine in large animal medicine, a rare distinction that underscores his commitment to excellence on a global stage. Speaking of friends, forage, and freedom, listen in to his top five tips for better health for your horse. Well, welcome. I'm able to sit today with Dr. Ben Sykes. I'm really excited to have you all the way from. Tell us where you're from so we know.
I'm from Coffs Harbour in Australia, so basically halfway up the east coast of Australia. So very nice part of the world, very similar to Southern California in many ways, weather-wise, and nice place to live.
Yeah, I think I've heard of this because they do film down there sometimes looking like California when they want a setting that looks like California. Is that right?
Yeah, around us and a little bit further north up in the Gold Coast, there's sort of the hinterland, and the hinterland would be quite similar to sort of the landscape we've got around here.
Yeah, nice. Well, it's June, and I love this time of year, and we're really fortunate to have you. I met you the first time a couple of months ago, I think, in this very room, because you gave us some interesting tidbits. But before we get into your workday and what you do and what you're passionate about, too, but I'd like a little of your horsey background before we delve into it.
Yeah, so I mean, probably the thing that I guess might surprise people is I'm not from a horsey background. I didn't grow up with horses. My older sister had horses, but that was very much her thing. And I really, it was only at the end of vet school that someone tapped me on the shoulder and said, you know, maybe you should go and do horses full time. And I sort of looked at the landscape and thought, yeah, actually, you know, that's a really interesting place to go and work. And I always wanted to work outside and sort of have the hands-on-y thing. And the combination of that and the complexity of horsework and the appeals of the complexity of horsework. So I've been a horse vet for nearly 30 years and it's been from there I've sort of morphed into, I'm not sure I still call myself a horse person yet, but I've had to learn the trade as I go and it's been a great experience. And now I have a family, young kids, they're all horsey and that's what we do now. So we're very much a horse family now.
Yeah. How old are your kids now?
I've got a 13, 15 and 17. Like so yeah. And the two girls, particularly the younger ones, that the middle one's absolutely horse mad. She's very, very much into it. And so, yeah, we spend many weekends just hauling horses from A to B and driving a truck. And it's fantastic. It's a great experience, a great family activity.
It is, isn't it? And I wish more people would know about that. That's what we're working hard to keep horses in people's lives. And I know you're working hard to keep horses healthy in people's lives. So let's delve into that a little bit too. So your daughter, let's say that horsey daughter is concerned about the health of her horse. What do you tell her to do on a routine basis?
Well, she's my teenage daughter, so I can't tell her anything.
Oh, that's a good
point. but she does, you know, she listens. They listen when you're not talking at them, when you're talking around them. And it's really interesting. I spend a lot of my time doing webinars and podcasts and stuff and talking about gastric health. And then I'll pull up to a horse show and there's my teenage daughter, you know, pulling out all these things and doing everything that we talk about. And, you know, I think you mentioned the idea we want to keep the horses in our lives, and that's that social license thing. And I think we're becoming more and more aware of it. And it's that we ask a lot from our horses. You know, where I live, we travel fairly long distances with our horses, and we use them, you know, in competition regularly. And so we have a really strong sense of responsibility back to them that we keep them healthy. And I think it's not just healthy, but we keep them happy. You know, we move into that state of from a veterinary perspective of it, not just being about welfare in terms of no disease, but in terms about being well-being, a good quality of life for these horses and doing things that they enjoy so that, you know, it's really a mutually beneficial relationship.
You know, I love asking veterinarians sometimes just the question of, what do you think this horse likes to do for a living?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, obviously it's going to vary from horse to horse, but, you know, a couple we've got are several of ours. I mean, they love show jumping. You know, we've got off the track thoroughbreds and Australian stock horses, and they just, once they get the hang of it, once they, oh, I can do this, they love show jumping and they love the cross country. You know, we took a young one out on the weekend. It's the first time he'd ever been out on a cross country course and off the track thoroughbred. And, the first two or three jumps, he's like, okay, I don't know what to do. And then by the end of the course, he's like, man, this is the best fun ever. And so I do think they really, they can really enjoy what we do with them. I think one of the big challenges we have as a veterinarian and people in your position as you know, advocates for horsemanship and horse wellbeing is communicating that to the broader audience that it's not a one-way relationship, that done right, the horse is actually getting genuine enjoyment out of it. And they like, you know, they like working, they like doing these activities done right.
Yeah, done right, meaning pain-free as much as possible, being, I guess, maybe in condition enough to do these things and make it possible. Do we, as a rule, are we backing off the training, or are we actually increasing the training with more efficiency to make it more possible for some of these extreme sports?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, because I think that I think we're seeing shifts in training. I mean, I think that we're seeing shifts in how we train horses and much more horse-centric behavior. You know, going back to the origins of where we're sitting today, that's really starting to flow through, I think, into more and more mainstream training, and more into my space, into that veterinary space. You know, traditionally we sort of as vets have been kind of told not to talk about training. It's not something, unless you really come from a horsey background and a real sort of horse person, that you would be sort of expected to have an opinion on. But I think we have a fantastic opportunity to be stewards of their well-being and to be stewards of that social license. And so I think we have a responsibility as veterinarians to actually go into that training space, develop our skills in that. And we don't have to know every nitty-gritty, but to really sort of guide the principles around that shift in training that we see to being more horse-centric and more about what they get out of it and how they perceive the experience, and at least recognizing that as much about as what we get out of it and what we get out of the experience.
Good. So the presentation that I saw you give a couple of months ago was a lot about feeding and gastric, so the whole gastric thing. And we're talking a lot about training, which is extrinsic right now. But I'd love to get into how you help. What are some of the biggest misconceptions that, generally speaking, we have about what would make the inside of the horse happier?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we've got the inside and the outside, and they're inherently connected. Mm-hmm. And I think a big part of that's where we're going in that conversation. I mean, I think if you had to answer it in one word, it's hay. You know, hay makes the insides of horses happy. And the foundation of everything we do nutritionally and everything we do, even from a management perspective, hay should be a cornerstone of that.
Okay.
And so, you know, hay is central to gastric health and preventing particular types of ulcers. It's central to good hindgut health. And it's also central to well-being and behavioral health. And if I was to choose one word, it would be hay. And we start with hay, and that's our absolute foundation. And then we move through there into, you know, other factors like the amount of carbohydrates in the diet and specific feeding strategies. And then I think we loop back into recognizing that when we talk about nutrition, we can get really technical, but we have to recognize that eating is a behavior. And when we look at individual horses and we look at, for example, gastric disease, which is often associated with decreased eating, mm-hmm. and it's cause and effect, that's a behavior. And so we've horses will only eat when they feel safe. And when they're in a, and so we cannot separate that behavioral element from the technical veterinary element. And I think that's really what we're starting to see in the broader conversation, is that loop is starting to close, rather than the sort of the technical veterinary being on one side and the horsemanship being on the other side. We're starting to see probably the veterinary side come a little bit more back over to the recognition of just how critical and central the behavioral aspects mm-hmm. contribute to the disease aspects.
That's good. So we need to focus on their social life.
Yep.
What was the FFF that you...
Friends, Forage and Freedom.
Friends, Forage and Freedom.
Freedom. I think are the, the cornerstones of welfare, but I think also well-being is, you know, every horse needs a friend. Friends, Forage and Freedom. And freedom is freedom to move out in space, but it's also freedom of choice, you know, giving them opportunities to make decisions for themselves. And if we look around here, Will and I were talking about this earlier, this idea, the setup we've got here where the horses can be outside grazing, they can have their forage, or they can go inside and stand in the shade, or if it rains, they can choose to be outside in the rain, or they can choose to be inside in the shelter. And that those three Fs, I think, are the absolute cornerstones we should be striving for in all modern horse management systems.
I love that. But it's hard, isn't it, Dr. Sykes? How do they do that?
It's hard, and change is hard. And, you know, a lot of what we see in the horse industry is very ingrained from historical practices. And again, we're kind of preaching to the choir here because that's the origin story of the California Horse Center. But I think the danger is we can polarize. We can say, well, if you're not doing all of this, you're inherently bad. And we put up a wall. And then once we put up that wall, that's it. You know, people shut down and they're not going to listen. So the way I like to think of it, the way I like to, when I would do education pieces and stuff, is I always think of tools in the toolbox. And so here are a range of strategies that are potentially beneficial, and to give the audience an opportunity to say, well, I can't make that one work. I can't make that one work. But if I make that one work, I've made an incremental step forward. And I think that's really, that's the path forward. I mean, we have to get there eventually. And I think to maintain our social license, we have to get there probably quicker than we think we do. Mm-hmm. But we're only going to get there one step at a time.
You know, here at the Monty Roberts International Learning Center, we're always experimenting with ways to help horses feel their best. Because a comfortable horse is a thinking horse. One of the tools we've added to our daily program is the Dry Me Solarium. And we've loved what it does for the horses. This gentle infrared heat helps relax muscles, increase the circulation, and it's a wonderful way to help horses dry and recover after work. It's the kind of thoughtful care that fits beautifully with Monty's philosophy of listening to the horse and supporting them physically and mentally. So we're really proud to welcome Dry Me Solarium as the title sponsor of Horsemanship Radio. If you'd like to learn more about how these systems support horse well-being, visit drimeusa.com. That's drimeusa.com. And use the promo code MONTY1 for $150 off your purchase. That's MONTY, the number one, for $150 off your purchase. And now let's get back to the show. 3, 2, 1. You know, there's something deeply moving about watching a Mustang choose to trust. In our new series at MontyRobertsUniversity.com, under Groundwork and Foundational Lessons, we take you inside the journey of training a Mustang to come quietly to the mounting block. Not through pressure, but through understanding, through timing, through the language of the horse. This isn't just about getting on, it's about building confidence from the first step on the ground. If you've ever wanted to start a horse the right way or restart one with kindness, come learn with us. Join me at MontyRobertsUniversity.com. Let's build partnership from the ground up.
And so it can be specific strategies around forage and ensuring forage. It can be something as simple as, and I know from the history here, the walk-in, walk-out.
Yeah.
Creating a walk-in, walk-out versus a traditional stable environment. Huge change in the horse now has choice.
Yeah.
freedom of choice to go in, to go out, and usually in the walkout has the opportunity to engage with another horse.
Yeah.
We're seeing changes in modern stable design where we're creating, where, you know, quarter walls that are open that the horses can reach across and groom, or they have the freedom of choice to go and stand in the corner by themselves and not engage.
Mm-hmm.
And those incremental steps are, I think, the way that we need to move forward rather than, and we have to be very careful of that all or nothing approach.
Yeah.
It's a journey, not a destination, but the destination we need to get there, you know, as soon as we can.
So all you horse people with opinions, we have to be careful. We can't all be perfect, but we are striving. And I'm glad you said walkouts and walk-ins as opposed to run-outs and run-ins. Those always make me nervous,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
I want them to slow down on this. But I'm glad the socialization is being brought into this too. So I'm glad you're talking about that. So if you've got a new client, let's say, and they're very vigilant and they, you know, want to do the best, what are some of the top 1 to 5 things that you would tell them to try?
The first thing, again, we look at is forage intake. And if I have a client, I get a lot of consults. I get the ones that aren't healing. So, or that the horse that has ulcers, when you look at its management, say, it really probably shouldn't. Why has this horse got ulcers? And one of the first things I'll do is ask people, they'll say, look, the horse has free choice hay. It has as much hay as it wants. So go and measure the hay intake. Go and actually see how much the horse eats. And again, it's that recognition that eating is a behavior. And so I think, and it's amazing how many of them aren't eating as much as you think they are. And without the hay in the stomach, it can't protect the stomach. And so that's a really fundamental starting point. We always talk about carbohydrates and avoiding excessive carbohydrates. So we don't need to avoid carbohydrates completely. We don't need to avoid grains completely. I think of it like red wine. You can have a glass a day, it's fine. Mm-hmm. You have 2 bottles a day, it's not okay. Mm-hmm. And carbohydrates and concentrate feeds are the same for horses.
Yeah.
In fact, concentrate feeds often have lots of really beneficial, balanced feeds. That's what they're for.
Yeah.
Thinking about exercise and, you know, as much as necessary, as little as possible. Rest days and building in rest days to the horses so that that not every day is physiologically and mentally demanding.
Okay.
And I think we can fall into the trap, particularly when we're training horses, of we want to get them somewhere, mm-hmm. but we've got to let them get there, not just in terms of their training, but in terms of their body.
Mm-hmm.
And the body across the board needs time to heal, and rest days are really important, that as well as the mental benefits of rest days.
Mm-hmm.
And then the socialization aspects. I really don't think we can discount that they have to be in the top 5. The socialization aspects and the well-being aspects of creating those 3, you know, that friendship and that freedom opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about just looking for opportunities to create that. We can't put every horse in a paddock. That's not the nature of modern horse management, but we can look for opportunities where, for example, in our walk-in, walk-out, maybe they can reach over and groom each other. And we know that neck-to-neck grooming is really critical. It's not just nose-to-nose, it's neck-to-neck. So they would be the top 5 I would start with. And then if we're dealing with problem horses, rethinking how we train them and rethinking a horse that's had a history of disease, how impactful that pain can be on that horse's experience, and how horses learn anticipatory pain-based behavior and triggers, and how we have to retrain them out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly when we're retraining them out of that, possibly that the traditional methods that we may have got the horse to there in the first place aren't necessarily going to be as effective in a horse that's now got a blocked state because of pain, and looking at alternatives that are more positively orientated.
Good. And is some of that habituated sometimes too? Do you have to get your mind around that?
Yeah, I think we have to get our minds about it because we all have our habits and we're all busy. You know, everyone's busy and you know, we rush in and we want to get the horse and we're going to saddle it up and we're going to ride it. And it's pressing that pause button. And you ask me about what does my teenage daughter do from what I tell her. And then I've sat back and watched what she does, and because she's got time and she's, you know, deeply. And I've got a couple of fantastic examples in my talks where she's actually reshaped the behavior of some of our problem in horses just by spending time and really positive reinforcement with them. And the best example I would give would be the classic horse, which is disagreeable during tacking up. You know, we're girthing them up and they're pinning their ears, they're turning around and you know, we're in a hurry. So we're just getting all that stuff done and it's frustrating to us that the horse is behaving like this. she'll come in, she'll give the horse some food because I've told her about pre-exercise feeding. She'll give the horse a scratch because the horse likes the scratch, and so she likes the scratch. And so they said, you know, I've got a great little video in today's talk of the horse being, and all of a sudden the whole experience changes. And it's not just the ground experience, but it resets that horse for the experience going into the riding. And the horse is not wound up. It's not anticipating. We know that horses, for example, with lameness issues show aversive behavior during tacking up. It's anticipatory.
Right.
And so it just resets and reprograms that. And so that habituation, I think, is it's them. They habituate. They learn. I mean, we know they're smart. We know they learn. But we also habituate, and we've got to be willing to break that cycle. And that can be really hard if you've been taught this is the way that it's done.
Mm-hmm.
It can be really hard, that process of self-reflection. I kind of feel like I'm lucky because I don't come from a horse background. I haven't had that bias. So I sort of just bumble through and can, you know, whereas I know that, you know, people can come when you've come up in an environment where it's very black and white about how it's meant to be done. It can be really confronting to have that conversation with yourself about how much am I contributing to this process and how much do I need to change to improve the horse's experience, which in turn will improve my experience. Mm-hmm. It's a circular loop. So
good. That's a mouthful. That's wonderful. Yeah, I am so glad. And you can say that and not have to duck when anybody's around or anything, you know. It's what people have to hear sometimes too, if we have grown up in a real traditional world, that it is pretty regimented that way too. And, you know, we're not even in Europe right now. So
And I think we have to be careful of being overly judgmental. I mean, everyone's got their story. Everyone's got their origin story and their background. But it's about creating opportunities and giving people tools, being able to say, well, if you try this and it works, then all of a sudden people have become converts. And again, I'm preaching to the choir here with the Monty Roberts world.
it's your world though too. Yeah. And that's why I'm glad to have you say it out loud because this is the stuff that we like to affirm as well. So you're giving a bit of a talk here in a minute. You mentioned that. Give us a little preview. So we're the insiders here.
Yeah. So we're covering two things. They're sort of two of my favorite topics. I think if we look historically at talking about ulcers, we've had a lot of conversation about how we treat them. But we're going to take a step back from that. And one of my favorite topics is that's very current at the moment is the behavioral aspects of disease. So horses with ulcers, we know that behavioral presentation is the most common reason in the US. There's a nice recent study with a large number of horses, by 80+%, 85-something% horses present because of behavioral change or undesirable behavior. And what if we look at that, but we take a step back and we look at the huge body of work that Sue Dyson has done with the ridden horse pain ethogram, what we actually start to do is form a much bigger picture, which is and it's a weird thing for an ulcer guy to say but don't assume it's ulcers.
Don't assume it's ulcers. Yeah.
You know, what you're actually seeing, and you assume it's ulcers because we're all programmed that way. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talk and a lot of things selling us and telling us it's ulcers. But actually, when we ask the question, when we step back, what we're mostly seeing with that behavioral change is very, very commonly, or most commonly, a pain-based behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in fact, we then start asking the question of not does the horse have ulcers, but does the horse have pain, and then where maybe that pain be coming from. And it changes the way we look at these horses. And so we're now looking at multiple potential causes of pain and recognizing that it doesn't have to be a singular source. We like one simple solution, but we know that in performance horses particularly, gastric disease is common, musculoskeletal disease is common, mm-hmm. and it can be both. And they can be summative, and when they get together, you get past that horse's tolerance threshold, and all of a sudden you get expression of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, that first talk is really focused then on getting all of us to take a step back and not be so channeled by our habituation of what we've been sort of trained to think and what we've been conditioned to think, to actually take it back and look the whole horse as, particularly as an athlete, because that's the majority of horses we deal with. And then the second talk is to prevention, and it's an expansion on where we started with that big five before, and really trying to dig into some of the nuances about the interactions. It's for me, it's three big things. It's exercise and carbohydrates and roughage, but how they all intersect with each other, mm-hmm. and then how the behavioral aspects intersect.
Okay.
And then the last bit is accepting that some of these diseases are very hard to treat and make go away. Yeah. And some of our horses are going to live with chronic disease. So what sort of strategies can we put into place to improve tolerance and threshold and focus on well-being, even if the horse has a level of disease that's present, but still making sure that we can, you know, build tolerance and threshold and still give them a good quality of life and a good quality of performance life, even if the disease is still grumbling away
in
the background.
That's what we all want, right? I mean, and I don't think we're using horses in that way. We're just giving them a life that's more fulfilling, you know, in their own minds too.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to sit and languish, right?
Yeah, and we reach a point where we recognize we've crossed that threshold. We can't manage that anymore. Mm-hmm. That's it. We're done, the horses.
That's right.
But yeah, I think it goes back to that purposeful life.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot – they do like to work.
They do.
You know, a lot of them do like to work. And the ones that don't, then you can't make them.
They're bigger than us. They're bigger and faster.
Yeah.
Actually, too.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds really interesting. I'm excited to hear more about it. So what is your superpower, do you think? I mean, I'm just thinking, gosh, you have so much in your background. Is it powers of observation? Is it the science behind it that you know so well?
I mean, I'd like to say it's the ability to translate that science into a conversation that hopefully makes sense to the horse owner.
To the owner,
Because it can be, and when I do my presentations and you've seen them, there's a lot of data in there and there's a lot of fact, which I think is, it should all be built off, you know, stuff
that's
that
good.
We know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that can be really flooding and overwhelming. And so it's breaking that down into little pieces so that we can walk away and say, okay, there's all of this material, but if you actually break it down into little pieces, then it's that tools in the toolbox analogy. It gives the owner or the listener the opportunity to pick one up at a time and say, all right, well, I can try that. And I know now how that intersects and interrelates with everything else in the big picture. Mm-hmm. Rather than just being told to do it, I have an understanding of why it's beneficial, not just the what to do, the why as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing so much. And I'm going to give you a rest now before you have to dive in and share with lots of us. We've got the Alamo Pintado, which is a wonderful hospital over here. There's going to be several participants, I think, tonight.
Oh, fantastic.
And we're just happy to be here for you, kind of center of the San Francisco Valley.
Thank you. Yeah.
And having Will Friday, we mentioned him just briefly, but Masterson Method. A very advanced.
Yeah, and it all ties in. It's all the same. Yeah.
Yeah, so, it's all good for horses.
Yeah.
And I'm just happy to have you on Horsemanship Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a beautiful part of the world. It's a beautiful facility, and it's really sort of humbling to have this conversation in what in many ways is the home of the conversation in terms of being more horse centric. So, absolute pleasure to be here today.
Thank you. We are grateful that this episode is brought to you by our title sponsor, Dryme Solarium, helping horses feel their best with therapeutic infrared technology trusted by professional barns around the world. Visit drymeusa.com and use the promo code MONTY1 for $150 off your purchase. And by our show sponsor, MontyRobertsUniversity.com, the most comprehensive place anywhere to learn Monty Roberts' concepts and methods of nonviolent horsemanship. For details about today's show, go to horsemanshipradio.com where you can find links and photos and more information about our guests. We love connecting with our listeners, so please follow us on Facebook under facebook.com/Monty Roberts and Instagram.com/Monty_Roberts. Be sure to visit all the other great shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. Until next time, have many happy horse hours.